higher performance and faster and more reliable.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock Podcast, episode number 222 for Tuesday, March 11th. Tonight, we're going to talk about Indy 500 qualification changes. Oriel Servia gets a partial ride, and Jack Hawksworth gets a seat. In rally, Sebastian Ogier wins in Mexico. Simon Pagenaud wins in his home country, France. And who knew that beer makes a good radiator fluid? And moving to Formula One, it is finally time for 2014. We'll preview Melbourne, as well as Bernie's crazy thoughts of Azerbaijan and other ways to get people to look elsewhere. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. So, Sean joining you as I do. And tonight we have a short staff here in the old paddock headquarters. Mike, you are the only guest, man.
Dude, I'm retro like that.
I know. This is throwback to, I don't know, like episodes 1 through 50.
Yeah, something like that.
Which is interesting that you and I spent the vast majority of the pre-show talking about comic books and some of the older comic books and storylines and stuff. And here we be in a situation that is pretty retro ourselves. So,
yeah, you
excellent.
Know, if you follow comic book storylines, you'll notice right away that they're telling the same story over and over again on something like a 5 to 10 year cycle, depending on the comic. So we're telling that story over again. This is Sean and Mike coming to you for Open Paddock, like a shiny new penny.
I'm Deadpool. You can be Wolverine.
I want to be Bishop. I want to be from the future.
Okay, fair. All right, well, we do have a few things to talk about. We will get into a little bit of Mazda Road Indy in place of Mr. Patterson. We will talk about Rally for Mr. Shaw. But we should start the show, as we probably do more times than not, and that's talking about our beverages. And unfortunately tonight, I mean, you and I were feeling kind of jaded. You know, nobody's here to talk to us. It's just you and I, you know, holding down the fort. So we've decided to go non-alcoholic.
Yeah, this is for me, it's something precipitated by things earlier this evening. I had a Cub Scout planning meeting this evening, which included a tasty beer, Columbus Brewing Company IPA, which I enjoyed greatly with my burger with blazing sauce on it. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Blazing sauce sounds like interesting times are ahead.
Well, you know. But it is interesting what that does. There's kind of an interesting mix up of sensations going on there with the blazing sauce and the beer. You know, that takes one over the top a little bit.
It does. Could be devastating. I myself tonight am drinking a vegetable drink. It is the brand. Obviously, I don't know how many health freaks listen to the show, but I am having the Naked brand orange and carrot juice with other natural flavors. It's packed with vitamins A and C.
Very nice.
Yeah, the back tells me what's actually in it. There's one orange and 2 1/3 carrots, somehow 1 1/2 apple, and 1/2 a mango with a hint of lemon and banana.
Ooh. So if you're listening at home, this could be your project during the podcast. You can blend it.
Yeah,
make it yourself.
You can blend it yourself. I've given you the recipe. And also, if you can find a good alcohol to mix it with, I will also take your suggestions via email at wfp@openpaddock.net. So anyways, well, let's get down to it. Since we obviously aren't a drinking podcast with a racing problem tonight, we should probably just talk about the racing. And starting off, we're going to talk about the changes to the Indianapolis 500 qualifying procedures. Now, as we've had the last couple years here, the cars usually qualify – 1 through You get the first day qualifiers, they get in there.
1 through 28 or something like that. I can't remember what arbitrary number they picked, but that was like running 2 years or something, and ugh, whatever.
Yeah, they did that. And then obviously on Saturday, you had your Fast 9 shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have pole position, you would have the winner of the pole position, and he would be good to go. And then obviously Sunday you would have you'd have your last chance qualifiers, and then you would have your bumping that would occur, the infamous bump day, which we really hadn't had much bumping with the
what
new
is this, what is this bump day you speak of?
I know. For those of you who have been around, I can't even remember when the last time we had like a healthy bumping amount of cars. I'm not talking like, oh, we had a couple here.
Yeah.
Or like Pippa Mann was trying to not get bumped out of, whatever position she was in. Stuff like that is not what I really call bumping, whereas you have, obviously, like,
whereas
you
have 10
cars.
Or 15 or 30 cars trying to make their way into the field.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was talking about.
Back in the day.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Those were the days when you really did require 4 days of qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
We've contracted to 2 days of qualifying, and now we're really going to a one-day qualifying. I mean, in essence, this is really a one-day qualifying with a pre-qualifying day.
Yeah. So what you get is Saturday, as is listed here in the Indianapolis Star. It's breaking it down nicely. Much easier to understand than the NASCAR chase for the championship. probably just as moving the sport even more into irrelevancy, nonetheless. Saturday on May 17th from 11 a.m. to 5:50 p.m., we're going to have the fastest 33 that will go to compose the field. But those times are not guaranteeing the starting position. All the entries are guaranteed at least one 4-lap run. The fastest 9 advance to Sunday shootout. So, okay, cool story. So you're kind of taking the top 9 and kind of moving them over here for a little fun on Sunday. Now on Sunday, May 18th, from 10:15 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., this is obviously Indianapolis local, you'll have Saturday times erased and positions 10 through 33 given another run to set the race's starting lineup. Cars will then qualify in order of slowest to fastest from Saturday's times. And then that moves us to Sunday, May 18th, from 2 to 2:45 p.m., roughly, the Fast 9 shootout, with each car given one attempt in the order of slowest to fastest from Saturday times. Aggregate times will determine pole winner and starting order of the first three rows. Now, this is per Kurt Cavan of the Indianapolis Star. Now, I guess you kind of have to do this because, let's look. You're bumping, if that's to even happen, is going to be on Saturday now.
Mm-hmm.
If that's a hypothetical one.
Not this year.
No. And probably not for the next couple of years, I would imagine. But
IndyCar just doesn't offer the return on investment. It doesn't make sense to go out there unless you're really guaranteed a spot in the field.
Yeah.
So
then we move into Sunday, where we're going to be talking about, about guys setting the field, basically, the rest of the field. And then you get into the Fast 9 shootout, which we've been accustomed to. So shaking it up a little bit, Mike, I'd like to hear your thoughts on exactly, what you think.
Okay. Well, my own thoughts on it. They're trying to create a TV event out of Sunday. They're trying to pack everything, trying to make the most consequential thing the last thing you see.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, the pole will be the last thing that's on track on Sunday. My own thoughts on this is drivel, this is crap, and I'm tired of seeing it done to the qualifying format of the Indianapolis 500, but I understand why it's happened, because there's so little interest in qualifying.
Indeed.
part of me kind of thinks it's silly to have them run a four-lap qualifying run on Saturday and then come back and do it on Sunday. Part of me would think, you know, maybe for Saturday, they do, you know, kind of like NASCAR's done with this all-skate thing where everybody's out on track at the same time, setting times. They do a two-hour session on Saturday, and the fastest times get slotted in as is.
I'm sorry, did you call it the all-skate?
It's an all-skate.
Oh, my. You Careful, know, Michael. Don't date yourself too much.
Dude, wait a second. Wait a second, because... If you were doing this whole NASCAR thing a couple of years ago, it was more of a doubles only. Right?
Oh my goodness! Oh my, double skate.
Can you shoot the duck?
I can't.
I never could either. I'm not that talented.
Nope. Maybe with the roller blades, but not with the roller skates.
So. Yeah. I don't know, Sean. I'm kind of annoyed by them changing the format yet again. All it is, this is a blatant announcement that, yeah, nobody gives a crap. So we're desperately trying to make you give a crap.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I understand what you're saying. As you know, it's taking... I mean, there's things that have happened that kind of buck tradition. You obviously introduced the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, whatever, at the beginning of the month of May. And you've been tweaking with the qualifying format and what have you. And I just really – I hope as much as they're open to changing things because of the current fiscal and kind of operating environment where there's just not a lot of cars to really bump right now, I understand. You know, I understand where they're coming from there. But if you do get the opportunity to have cars – you know, a substantial amount of cars try to make a run into the field. I would like to see Indianapolis take the same stance and go back and say, okay, well, now we've got a lot of cars to bump. Let's make it go back to the way it used to be. Because there is nothing, and I tell you nothing, more stressful than on Sunday afternoon, you're waiting for the gun to go off, and you have a car that's trying to make a run into the field. I mean, that is what Indianapolis 500 qualifying is all about. If nothing else, it's for pole position, and nobody cares about anything else except for who's getting bumped and who is not getting bumped. And that, my friends, if you can tell me that Indianapolis will go back and will say, you know, one day they'll have 10 cars, we'll say, trying to make the field, and they come back and they say, oh, you know what? We got a pretty sizable entry list here. Let's change the qualifying format to go back to the way it was because we can create that drama. I understand why they do it now, but I really hope that they're open to going back in the instance that more cars show up because it is. It's basically saying, okay, well, you know what? Nobody's bumping, so who really cares? Because now it is nothing more than a NASCAR qualifying session where you've got one car on track. He's doing four laps. He or she is doing four laps, and then they come into the field or into the pits, and then that sets the field. But, I mean, please, if Verizon comes online and some of these other things come to fruition and we can get more cars out there and more interest in the sport, I see no reason why Indianapolis cannot go back to the way it was.
Well, I don't see any way they could keep it. You know, let's say they have 40 cars show up on Saturday, there's not enough time to give people more than maybe one run.
Yeah, you know, you're not really bumping anything at that point.
Yeah, at that point, it's basically you run, you get what you get, and there's not really enough. There's not more time to do another run through the pill draw line. There's just physically not time for it.
And then what do you do if you have like a Penske car or something hit the wall? Well, and then all of a sudden you're looking at perhaps one of your best teams or best drivers not being able to compete because your qualifying format is all messed up.
Yeah. And the other thing that it does is it has people running their qualifying runs at suboptimal times during the day. I mean, you would draw a pill and get in line and try and get your run in before it got too late in the afternoon. You know, by 3 o'clock, yeah. people aren't running. They don't want to risk it. And then it really didn't pick up again until 5 in the evening. Maybe a little earlier if there's a lot of people that had some activity. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. From a traditionalist standpoint, I'm not happy. But I understand now why they need to do it now. But again, just make me feel better and say, sure, Sean, there might be a chance that we revert to the old qualifying schedule if business picks up. That's all. You'll make me a happy boy if you just say that.
The other side of it is this year, in recognition of the fact that they have going back and forth, in recognition of the fact that they have recognized that qualifying is garbage and nobody shows up, and the only way we're going to get people to pay attention because it's so worthless is if we change the format one more time, I'm doing something completely different, and I'm going to go to the Grand Prix instead.
Whoa.
And I think they're going to find a lot of people doing that this year. A lot of people that are just, I'm tired of seeing you screw with qualifying. Instead of that, I'm going to go watch an actual event instead of this manufactured garbage. I mean, maybe they should take a cue from the guys across the street, you know, and at the USAC office, and they could always, you know, make them run their qualifying lap. Then after they run their qualifying lap, slot them into heats, and they have to race to get their qualifying lap back. And invert field and all that good stuff, man.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there for sure. But, you know, I don't know. Just please, you know, just tell me that it can come back. That's all I want.
Yeah.
Well, let's move along and talk about Oriol Servia, like your favorite driver. And he's got at least four races now with the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan crew, just as was predicted by that source that we had talked about some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Servia is going to come back and race in four races. Why don't you let us know? Well, I'm not going to steal your thunder. Why don't you tell us about your favorite driver and his comeback?
Well, he's going to be running for Ray Hall Letterman at least four races, and I honestly didn't even see if he listed out which races they are other than Indy. Okay, here we are. Test with the team at Barber.
Long Beach. Well, he's going to be running, it looks like, Long Beach, Barber, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, and then the Indianapolis 500.
Ooh, so they front-loaded the season then.
Yeah, with the potential for more, I would reckon, if sponsorship, if sponsorship materializes, I would guess.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, they're running on the strength that they've got a lot of Ray Hall's Graham Ray Hall's sponsors from last year that are kind of being they're getting less prime billing on the car this year. And they're going to use that to put prime billing on Servia's car as best they can.
Mm-hmm. I think this is good news, though. I mean, obviously, Servia is a fantastic driver, except for when he's running next to me on iRacing and I put him in the wall. And by that, I mean he put himself in the wall. But no, obviously at Indianapolis, he's proven to be phenomenal. Obviously, everybody kind of on even footing for the Grand Prix. And then obviously, Long Beach being the hallmark event. And then Barber is also ranks right up there as probably one of the better early season draws for fans with the weekend and everything. So I think this is good news, obviously, for Servia. I think he gets to race at some of the great events for this year. And then who knows, we'll see what happens with the rest of the season and see if they can't load up a little bit more sponsorship on that car.
Yeah, indeed.
But, speaking of other folks getting rides in IndyCar, Jack Hawksworth, as you remember Doug talking about Jack and his prospects for an IndyCar ride, obviously he has been doing some testing here and there and everything, and he has actually picked up the reins for the number 98 Brian Herta Autosport entry, so that actually will go over. He will. He has won the seat over Luca De Filippi.
And, he has brought a bigger check than Luca Filippi.
Yeah. He actually, Luca, oh yeah, I'm sorry, Luca Filippi, he says on the Twitter, so here we are. As usual, the winter never brings me much luck. It normally never comes to me with too many surprises, but it is what it is. So obviously kind of upset with, obviously he's upset that he's lost His ride, and you know, he did a lot of the testing. And the thing with Hawksworth too that I don't understand is, yes, he's fast, but like, as Doug noted when we talked about it on the show, he kind of has a knack for finding the wall or the tires. So he's not gentle on the equipment whatsoever. So I don't know.
And seeing these quotes from the team, quite frankly, Jack really impressed us with a very strong test at Sebring last month. Quite frankly, Jack impressed us with a really big check that came before Luca Filippi's did.
And that's why he's beside himself.
Yeah.
He's like, I can never get my check to clear on time. I did not get it. It's not fair.
Well, it is motorsport. Unfortunately, the whole realm of motorsport has fallen on hard times. And, you know, there are some standouts, but just about everybody in motorsport is bringing a check these days.
Well, we look, speaking of big checks anyways, and we can go ahead and move right into the fact that it looks like IndyCar is about to get a pretty darn good check actually from Verizon, as Verizon Wireless and Verizon, the cellular company. You can't really just call them wireless anymore, can you? Because they offer so many different services. But we do have Verizon looking like they're just about ready to ink that deal, if they haven't already by the time you listen to this. A 10-year deal cited at $100 million to serve as the title sponsor.
Yeah, this is good. You know, $10 million a year, but it's $5 million for rights. This is right now what's being bandied about in some of the Sports Business Journal, but also other places, or Sports Business Daily, and some other places are guessing as to what this is, or they have inside sources that they can't reveal. But they're saying $5 million a year. And an additional $5 million guaranteed that they will be spending on activation of the series. This is, Izod actually paid more. They paid $6 million a year for rights, but there was not as much activation in the deal. So, I don't know.
But good for IndyCar regardless. I mean, you know, you need a title sponsor for the series. Obviously, NASCAR's got the Sprint Cup. Verizon is just mega in the world of technology. I actually switched from AT&T to Verizon. I'm quite happy.
Good.
Very happy. So, I wanted to get my exclusive. I wanted my exclusivity to the app.
Don't be exclusively annoyed when you finally see it.
It's like,
it's okay. The thing that has to be said is, let's see who's been sponsors in IndyCar before. You had Northern Lights, you had Pep Boys, you had Izod. Izod was a big name compared to the other two. It really was. You know, it's a traditional name. It's been around for decades. You might have one of those shirts with the little alligators on it. You know, around forever. And I kind of expected more from Izod than what they did. They came in, they ran some pretty ridiculous commercials during races, but never really saw much outside of racing, you know, outside of running ads on, you know, IndyCar races, activating the fact that they were involved with IndyCar. Verizon, I'm thinking, is going to be different, because one of the things that we've already seen with Verizon, this isn't like Verizon has no clue what they're getting into and they just hope it pans out. Verizon's been involved with IndyCar for several years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a sponsor to Penske, as kind of a technology partner for the league and various things like that, providing the phones that they voted for the new car on, all that kind of crap.
Look at the Blackberries powered by Verizon. We are going to vote for the new car. Oh, a day that will live in infamy.
It was a Motorola phone, if I remember right. Anyway. Yeah, so, you know, it's good that Verizon is getting involved because they're already involved and they know what they're, you know, they know what they're investing in. So it just makes it feel like they're going to be around for a lot longer than, say, iZod was. And signing a 10-year contract's a big deal. I mean, think about it. They signed a 10-year contract with NBC Sports or Versus at the time. Might not end up being the best decision at 10 years.
Because, indeed. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're locking in. It's 10 years at $100 million. That's great. But in that 10 years, the goal of the IndyCar series is to grow. And if it does, that 10 years at $100 million is going to be dirt cheap. It's going to be like buying the rights to Formula One for a song and a dance from the FIA.
That's never happened.
Never.
Oh, I'm going to vomit.
Yeah, well.
Well, let's see. Well, good news. Still patiently waiting. Speaking of patiently waiting, that was a natural segue. The city of Long Beach has put off its vote on the request for the Formula One bid. So we're kind of still waiting to see what happened. We talked last week about how Long Beach, the Long Beach Council, is going to vote to see if it was okay for people to shop around and perhaps bring the Long Beach Grand Prix back into the Formula One fold as F1 continues to passively, I guess, look for a second Formula One race here in the United States. Obviously, everything with New Jersey is kind of just cloudy and murky. Nobody knows what's going on from one day to the next as far as that's concerned. But the fact is this. Long Beach has been there before and are looking anyways maybe to be there again, but we've put off the vote.
Yeah. Some of the statements that I've read on this is basically the council didn't feel like they had adequate information to actually take a vote. They wanted to do a little more due diligence before they even opened it up for the possibility of F1 or a promoter coming forward and bidding for an F1 race. So, yeah, I mean, there's big money involved in this. You're talking about at least $100 million worth of upgrades to the facility and an extension of the track because 2 miles is not long enough. There's a lot that has to happen to allow Formula One to be in Long Beach. They need to really look at this hard because you don't spend $100 million and then, you know, $30 million a year or whatever Bernie ends up charging you for the sanction fee. You don't just drop that out of your pocket. And they can't just just have to be careful.
Yeah. Well, naturally, I think, you know, anytime you're talking about suiting up and doing business with one Bernard Ecclestone, you need to do your homework and make sure, regardless of whether or not it goes to Formula One or stays with IndyCar, frankly, I mean, to me, it doesn't overly matter to me.
Yeah,
I'll watch either, but
to me, you know, I'll be brutally honest. It's one of the IndyCar races that I could care less about. It's a too tight street course.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if it's the atmosphere or what, but everybody's always so excited to go, and you know, naturally, I'm just as excited as the next guy when it comes to going to an IndyCar race, just because I like to go. But like to me, like the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach is not on my like I have to be there list ever.
Yeah,
It's
not on my list of I have to watch this race.
Yeah,
you know, Brazil when it was on the schedule, I had to watch that race. It was a very good street course track. I think the same as St. Petersburg. I think it's a much better street course track than Long Beach. So, but the event has its history and. It's one of the few events in the United States that you could say, well, they could take this and turn it into a Formula One race.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What about the Daytona 500?
Oh, that'd be awesome. couldn't you see Sebastian Vettel flaming down the backstretch?
Oh, my goodness. just like, mother of God, what is that?
It's the jet dryer. Oh, no, wrong series.
Nice. I like that. That's well played, sir. Well played. We'll see what happens.
Well,
is that fair?
Yeah, it's exactly fair. And I don't think this is going to go through, but you never know. I mean, here's how this transpired. Bernie Ecclestone met with these people, and Chris Pook, who actually got the event started, is the one that's kind of championing the idea of bringing F1 back. So you've got big names involved in this. Bernie came to them and said, hey, would you consider this going back to F1? So this isn't just some fly-by-night guy going, you know, I think this would be a great F1 race. We should try and get a race here. It's very different.
Yeah. Bernie doesn't usually reach out, so to have Bernie reach out is obviously a big deal. So
yeah, I think part of it is Bernie is tired of waiting for New Jersey to come to fruition, and there's some concern that it will. So he's looking for another option.
He's like, let's go ahead and ratchet it up a notch, shall we?
Well, so it can work two ways. It can be a great negotiating ploy to get New Jersey to sign and actually get their money together, or it can be another venue when New Jersey falls apart.
Yeah, basically. So all right. Well, we'll keep our eyes on that, obviously. So keep it here, as we will bring you that information as it is made available. Let's talk about Panther. Now, Panther, we've obviously been in the news for all the wrong reasons here as of late, but it looks like they're still trying to get a car out there on track come St. Petersburg. They have taken their name out of Leader Circle money, probably a concession by Mr. Barnes saying, well, no, we probably shouldn't pursue this right now. Let's just we don't need Leader Circle money after we get done suing the pants off you.
Oof.
You know, sad but true, I reckon. But
Who knows how long it's going to take, though.
yeah, true. But at the end of the day, I mean, you look at it and you know, I don't know who all they've been running. I've lost track, honestly, of who they've been running in the off season to bring onto the team. But they have, you know, I mean, I'll say this about Panther, okay? Like, I don't care about the guy who runs the team. I've had friends who've worked for the team. I've never been a super fan of the organization. But I will say this. When it comes to Indianapolis and the Indianapolis 500, which at the end of the day, I think that we more times than not concede is probably the only thing that overly super matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're there. They are a force to be reckoned with when it comes to the Indianapolis 500. I mean, a team does not simply finish second place as much as they did without having something in it. You know what I mean? And say what you will about their tactics, and I've been super critical of Panther as an organization, and I still will be, because I think, you know, there's a definite lack of professionalism in the way that team is run and the way that the decision-making process is handled for Panther. But at the end of the day, they get it done at Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. Yeah, you know, people have had their qualms with John Barnes over the year, but somebody who doesn't would be at least I don't think he does, is Sam Hornish Jr., who won a couple of championships driving for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's a good point. The team in the days of you know. In the days of running the IRL.
And the days of the yellow car.
Yeah, in the days of the yellow car, I mean, they were a good team.
Yeah,
so, I don't know what it is that's caused this to be the way it is for them in terms of the mentality and the way that they kind of are jerks to certain people. But, I mean, you know, it is the way it is, and the man's running a business. And just as you said when we were talking about the fact that, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they pushing this legal matter? Blah, 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 blah. Well, at the end of the day, they owe their sponsors and their employees. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So. You know, John Barnes says they've got they're talking with three different drivers, waiting for the checks to clear, basically, yes. To try and get a car on the track. They would love to be a full season effort, but, you know, it's one of those things of you go and ask and they say, yeah, we want to be a full season effort. We're just kind of waiting for our cards to be, you know, played. And so, yeah, we understand what's going on. They're looking for funding, and unfortunately, you know, their stream of funding completely disappeared, and they were kind of taken for, you know, a bit of a loss because they were counting on that sponsorship because they were the only one that could provide that sponsorship according to their briefs.
Of course.
You know, the thing that's kind of interesting on this is they willingly backed out of the leader's circle simply because they could not guarantee they'd have a car on the track for the season. And that's kind of been an interesting thing in this offseason. There are a couple runners last season who, at least one in particular, that could not make the full season. Even though they had leader circle money and there were penalties involved with that, but they've made them much harsher to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And for the life of me, I can't remember who it was that actually didn't make the full season, for the leader circle. And, whatever. But John Barnes couldn't sign the paperwork for the leader circle because he couldn't guarantee they'd be there.
Nice. We don't even know if we're going to be here at the end of the season, bro. We don't even know.
Yeah.
But, well, it is what it is. Hopefully they get an effort together and are able to put together a season. So, I mean, regardless of who it is, having a car on the grid, that doesn't hurt. So,
indeed.
Or at least hurt us as fans. So, all right. Well, that's all we have for IndyCar this week. So stay tuned on some of those follow-up items, and we'll try to get back to you on those. But moving into the Mazda Road to Indy, the only thing that we really have is the broadcast schedule, and on-air talent for those races has been released per NBC Sports Network. So it looks as though, 14 rounds of Indy Light action will be showcased in 10 shows, which will include full coverage of single race events and highlight coverage of the 40-minute sprint race rounds. 7 of the 10 shows will air immediately before or after IndyCar race broadcast, with the Freedom 100 at Indianapolis Motor Speedway airing live, actually, on May 23rd. So what we've got is St. Petersburg will be delayed. Long Beach will be the same day coverage at 2:30 to 4 p.m. Barber Motorsports Park on the 27th of April will be same day as well. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course, not really sure what they're going to do with that, but the Oval obviously will be live from 12 to 1, and that is on May 23rd. Pocono, Toronto, Mid-Ohio, Milwaukee, and Sonoma will also all enjoy same-day coverage for the Indy Lights presented by Cooper Tires. So that's what you have there. And then the yes. Okay. And then 2014 highlight show, May 24th, you'll have Pro Mazda from Barber and a featured race of USF 2000 in St. Pete. June 13th from 2 to 3 a.m.
Nah.
Set your DVRs. We'll be Jesus.
Don't let it conflict with any of your F1 races.
Right. The Indianapolis Road Course will be 2 to 3 a.m. on the 13th of June. August 24th, we're talking about the streets of Houston for the Pro Mazda, the streets of Toronto for USF 2000, and then the Sonoma Double for both of those championships will be on September 5th from 2 to 3 a.m. So as you can see, prime time listing for the Mazda Road Indy.
I have a comment about that in a second. I mean, the rest of them are, you know, mid-afternoon, late-afternoon time slots. It's these highlight shows. Okay, here's the deal. And that's USF 2000 and Pro Mazda highlight shows. So kind of understand what's going on there, but wow. Okay, your on-air talent for the Road to Indy for Indy Lights will be Kevin Lee.
Yay.
As the anchor for the coverage, and Anders Krohn will be the color guy.
Nice. I like Anders Krohn. He's a good guy. So I had the pleasure of talking with him a few times, and guy's stuff together. A great story, Anders Krohn.
Yeah.
And it's good to see him move up from that driving role and kind of that instructor role to really take the helm and talk about that talent. I mean, who better than somebody who has the kind of experience racing these cars like Anders Krohn?
Yeah. Mark Janes and Pippa Mann will be continuing their roles as analysts, and all kinds of fun stuff. The interesting thing that has to be pointed out are these highlight shows. What in the world is this? 1:30 to 2:30 a.m.? Really? It's great that you've got something on television that you can point to, but nobody's ever going to see this.
Mm-hmm. You got to DVR it, man.
Well, see, that's the thing. A little highlight show like that, you have to be an enthusiast to even be interested in. And if you are interested in it, you have to go search it out. Those highlight shows are great to throw on the middle of the afternoon when you've got dead time.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody can watch it, but this is not dead time.
No, not.
Well, yeah, it is. It's just, you know, every day it's dead time.
Yeah.
And nobody's watching that.
Ugh.
Oh, well.
That's tough, but shall see.
The great thing is you've got Indy Lights, and you've got decent time slots for all those races. So that's great. That is fantastic.
Well, I'm going to actually change up the order of the show notes here because that is all we have for Mazda and Indy. I'm going to go ahead and jump into sports car, though, for the Tudor United Sports Car Championship. We only have one thing that we're going to be talking about, and that is Sebring. So the Sebring this year is going to be a bit different because as opposed to seeing the WEC and the American Le Mans cars out there, now we're going to have the Tudor Sports Car Championship. So we're talking about Grand Am and American Le Mans Series. Had a couple more entry withdrawals since our last show, those being mainly not because of issues cited by Level 5 Motorsport, but mainly because of tires and some technical things that some of the teams are working for. We are going to see the cars Storm Sebring. So it looks like we've got 65 entries currently in Sebring. And I think this year we should – I think this race will see a much better fight between the P2 cars and the Daytona prototypes. We kind of got robbed of that at Daytona. But it looks like, at least if testing is to be any indication, that the BOP changes will bring that gap down just a little bit. And hell, who knows? We could even see some P2 cars maybe take it to the prototypes and actually defeat them. So that would be nice. So show a little parity there. Also, this is the first week that we're going to get to see the Falcon Tire Porsche. So it was a great little video put together by the Falcon Tire folks where they showed the new 911 RSR that they'll be using to compete with for the rest of the championship, I reckon. So we'll see that car on track, sharp-looking car. Watch the video. Was very impressed. So stay tuned. I do believe it was Fox Sports 1 is going to cover the first 3 hours of the event. And then, obviously, I'm sure the Tudor United Sports Car Championship website should have the rest of your coverage needs taken care of. So we'll see what happens there. Anything for you, Mike? You going to be catching any of this or probably going to pass on this one?
Yeah, I'm going to pass on it. I just – not – it hasn't captured my imagination. We'll just put it that way.
Yes. All right, well, let's talk about WRC because we had the Rally of Mexico, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Mike Shaw is not here to discuss it, but I will do the best I can to put the rally shoes back on. and we will talk about Rally Mexico. So, again, Rally Mexico, as we said last week, was the last of the kind of specialty rallies in the sense that you have Monty, which is Monty, Sweden, which is snow, and now Mexico, which is kind of really attrition heavy and high altitude, which presents some unique issues with the cars and the engines, as we've seen throughout throughout our time in Mexico. It was a great rally. It was a very exciting rally at the end. It was exciting even past the end, the last stage, the power stage. So we had some crazy stuff, but at the end of the day, and we'll get into each team here. We'll do a little bit different this time, as Mr. Shaw has left us some nice notes to cover. But Sebastian Ogier, Jari Matti Latvala, the two Volkswagen juggernauts, took a 1-2 in Mexico. Thierry Neuville, yes, Thierry Neuville takes third place for Hyundai. and their debut season, and well, you know, reemergence, I guess,
and their debut podium.
Yeah, and they get a podium at Rally Mexico, probably one of the hardest rallies to even finish on the podium, let alone finish on the podium. And then Elfyn Evans finished fourth, Prokop fifth. So notables, Chris Atkinson seventh, Mikko Hirvonen eighth, Mads Osberg ninth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Andreas Mikkelsen back in 19th after his car, like, destroyed itself seven times over. But let's just break it down by the actual manufacturer. What we had was Volkswagen. They dominated, of course, as we just mentioned. There wasn't really as much of a problem with the road sweeping, because we had talked about how road sweeping can present unique challenges to the drivers and make starting position and championship position sometimes a hindrance, if you will. But a loose gravel prevailed for many of the WRC cars, and it wasn't really swept away until the second pass. Ogier would overtake Mads Osberg on day two on the second running of the El Chocolat, and didn't look back, as Mike says. There were no closed cattle gates, and Jari Matti didn't quite have the pace to outdo his teammate or even Mads Osberg for most of the event. But he did hold his own and stayed away from mistakes, which obviously we know is huge for Jari Matti, and he was able to finish second position. So Andreas Mikkelsen, as we said, many problems. He ended up not running on day four. Go to YouTube. There's a nice video of him rolling. He ripped off some tires, a whole bunch of stuff. M Sport, Mikko Hirvonen was doing very good, but then he ran out of his alternator broke. So it's a McLaren alternator, and it broke. Yeah, that sucks.
Bad signs.
Indeed. Typical Ford, man. I'm telling you, typical, not so much Ford, but typical M Sport, if we don't want to lump Ford in. But, I mean, typical M Sport, you know, cannot build a car to last to save their lives in terms of competing at the highest level. Sure, safest cars of all time, but probably not the most, not built very well in terms of withstanding these rallies, as they always seem to have mechanical issues plague them. Elfyn Evans, again, unsung hero for M Sport, young chap, wasn't the fastest by a long shot, but he did drive smart. And as we know in rally racing, smarter is sometimes faster than just balls to the wall, flat out. And because of his efforts, he was awarded with fourth overall. So that's his best finish, best career finish in a WRC event, just one shy of the podium there for Mr. Evans. So a bright future, as that pace will come to him. He will get the pace eventually as he continues to run. And we'll see how that works out for him, if he can keep the smarts and the pace on a level footing. As far as Citroën is concerned, Osberg, he was having a great day. It was actually leading into day two when he was overtaken by Ogier. Yeah, so Ogier, well, he went second, and then Wyatt on day three and broke rear suspension, which actually you'll see that on – there's a great YouTube highlight video of day two that of day three that actually showed that event happen. So he tried to fix it, but it couldn't hold on. Chris Meek also was doing very well in his first ever visit to Mexico, and he went off day two. He went off, and then he had to do the rally too. And this he was not able to really keep up much more. He hit a rock, the power stage. Hit the rock on the power stage and ended up DNFing. So as far as another Ford privateer entry, Robert Kubica, he was doing pretty good. And then he had a lot of problems. Had some rolls. I think he rolled twice. Day three, went wide on a blind crest and happened to smack one. A concrete culvert, rolled again. Robert Kubica's rally driving is much in line with what we see when Kimi Raikkonen was driving. So a lot of interesting stuff. But Hyundai, last but not least, they were kind of just showing up, hedging their bets just to finish. But they actually had a fantastic weekend. As we mentioned, Terry Neuville finished third on the podium, not without his amount of drama. And then Chris Atkinson, as we mentioned before, finished seventh overall as well. Now, what everybody seems to be talking about is Terry Neuville was driving his rally, and he ended up finishing third overall. But the rules are that all cars must make it back to service, the service park, into the final time control, or you DNF. So you have to make it back. It's not just a matter of running the last stage and, all right, boys, we're done here. You actually have to make it back to your time control. Colin Clark was on his way back to the service park. However, Bex Williams, WRC Radio, she noticed that on her GPS tracker that she uses to kind of see where the cars are in the stages and to look at split times, she noticed that Thierry had stopped in transit. Which obviously is high drama. Well, what had happened was through the power stage, there was some jumps in the power stage, and the Hyundai actually broke when it hit those jumps. It caused a radiator to leak. So now we've got a car that's basically bleeding out on the way back to service and is having a hard time. You know, it has to make it back, because if it doesn't, he's DNF'd, and there goes Hyundai's podium. So the I-20 was in deep trouble. However, Thierry and his co-driver, who's Nicolas Gasol, they tried every way to find out how to get the car to retain fluid. They fixed the hole in the radiator the best that they could. And then here's where it gets interesting. They took the water out of their camelbacks, which, for those of you who don't know what camelback is, it's like a backpack that you can fill water in. We in the service actually use them all the time. Yeah, it has a little straw that goes, and you can, you know, sip out of your little water pack, put some ice in there, and it keeps it cool and everything. So nice, nifty little devices. Neuville and his co-driver decided they were going to pour the water, or what water was left in their camelbacks, into the radiator to try to keep it cool. And then, if you didn't also know, Corona is the main sponsor of the rally in Mexico. On the way back, they got some free beer bottles some free beer bottles, obviously celebratory beer bottles. And they actually took the beer and poured it into the radiator of the Hyundai I-20.
That's hilarious.
It is. And we're talking about a 30-kilometer trip, roughly, you know, around 15 miles or so to make it back to the final time control. And, I mean, everybody's listening to World Rally Radio, and they're on the edge of their seats because the rally, while for all intents and purposes is over, it's not over because this car has to make it back to the service. So they did end up making it, as we said in the results. So the Hyundai I-20 did secure its first ever podium thanks to beer. So all of you who scoff at us because of our drinking podcast with a racing problem, you think the next time that you're driving home and you just picked up a six-pack and your car starts to overheat, just pour some beer in there, because you're going to have to flush it out anyways.
You may as well put some beer in there. You do that, you got to get rid of the bottle. Open container laws. You have to pay very careful attention to that. And don't do like they did. I mean, this is a major faux pas. They poured a Corona in their radiator, and they didn't put a lime in it.
Ooh. That's a party foul. You can use the beer to power the car, but you don't put a lime in there. But then, from the same line of thinking, men don't put fruit in beer.
Then that means men don't drink Corona.
Exactly. I drink Corona without the lime. I do not put a lime in there. I just drink it straight.
I don't really care for Corona,
I don't either, to be honest. It's a seasonal thing.
Yeah.
Anyways. So looking at the WRC, Benito Guerra, he finished sixth. He was a local Mexican driver again. That's one of the things I love about some of these rallies. You get some of the local cats out there running for position. WRC 2, the winner was Yuri Protsov from the Ukraine. Suck it, Papa Putin. So Ukraine finally able to celebrate something, and that was their rally driver taking top spot in the WRC2. And get this, the last two stages he only had two-wheel drive.
Nice.
But it didn't matter because he had a 20-minute lead ahead of his rivals. 20 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, what the hell is that? Oh, hoity ho ho, I have a 20-minute lead. Can you even imagine?
That's beneficial.
Yeah. I'll say that's mighty impressive. So good stuff. That's just cool. So anyways, all right. Well, let's go ahead and move on from the WRC. I will talk about the championship. Oh no, we can't. We'll move away from WRC. We'll get into Simon Pagenaud here in a minute. But the WRC looks like this. The championship now belongs to Sebastien Ogier. He's got 63 points over his Volkswagen teammate Jari Matti, who's got 60 points after a big win there for Ogier in Mexico. Mads Osberg, good God, he's third position with 32 points. So Jari Matti, who's second place in the title, has nearly two times the points as Mads. That's tough.
Yeah.
So Mikko was right. Mikko Hirvonen saying, you know, Volkswagen's unbeatable. And, I mean, it's almost to the point now where, like, somebody's got to do something, because you're talking about maybe losing the championship as a championship, not just as in, like, teams losing the championship, but you're talking about losing the championship altogether because of dominance like this. I mean, there's no competition.
Well, the hard thing is that they went from several years of there being hardly any competition against Citroën to now Volkswagen's doing it.
Yep.
That's difficult to overcome. I mean, there's no back and forth among the top teams except when Ogier falls on his face.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to do. We can talk about it maybe next week with Mike Shaw. But, you know, it's grim when you start to see that kind of domination. Mm-hmm. It's grim. You don't know what to do. So, but let's move on to some actual grassroots rally. Sebastian, jeez.
If you win in racing, your name is Sebastian.
Indeed. Well, at least if you're in an FIA championship. Simon Pagenaud, he ended up winning the, I'm going to screw it up, Rally National de la Vigne.
Sounds good.
Crepes. There we go. I just said a French word.
Freedom fries.
too soon. It was his first ever victory in a rally. So he was driving a Peugeot S2000. He had a lot of French regulars that were taking part in this rally. He ended up taking 8 stage wins to collect his first outright rally victory of his career. He was a minute and 5 seconds clear – of his closest threat.
Nice.
Now, here's the thing. I'm looking at this picture, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it looks like Pagano's got a full face inside the rally car.
Ooh.
The only reason I mention that is that's kind of, what do you call that, taboo, I guess.
Mm.
Used to seeing kind of the open face helmets in rally and all that, and this guy looking like he's carrying a closed face. Regardless, great momentum for Simon going into the championship here, the IndyCar championship. A lot of top drivers like to hone their skills in those rally cars ahead of their championship. We've seen Raikkonen used to do it all the time before Formula One. And by do it, I mean roll or hit the side of a mountain or roll. I don't know. Then you had Robert Kubica, who used to do that as well until his tragic accident before his championship. So, I mean, you know, you look at it, and, I mean, it is a favorite pastime. It is a bit dangerous, but it is a great way for drivers to prep themselves for the upcoming championship.
Yeah, so. I see this as an opportunity for Simon Pagenaud. I mean, Mitsubishi Rally Team USA probably needs a factory driver, and they could certainly jump there right into the Rally America Championship or what have you. I mean, this is cool. This is really cool. You can go out and do these things, and even though some people have had issues with running rally in their spare time, I'm looking at you, Robert Kubica, it's just really neat that they can come out, run these events, and do as well as he did. I mean, even though he's competing in a local French rally, this is a level of competition that he hasn't. He doesn't face very often. I mean, these are more like what we'd see at a Rally America event. Mm-hmm. But still, they're guys that do rally all the time compared to what Pagenaud does. None.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. I like it. So I like. I like drivers who go out there and compete in multiple disciplines, as I said last week when we were talking Kurt Busch. So good on him. Let's talk about Formula One. Let's get into Formula One, because this week, Mike, is the start of the Formula One Championship. 2014, always a great time during the calendar year. So we're now going to be talking about some F1, but we can't talk about the cool stuff until we talk about the dumb stuff. And the dumb stuff is, again, Bernie Ecclestone opening his mind about maybe going to Azerbaijan in 2015 or 2016.
Okay. Somebody has offered to bring him a giant check.
Pay me.
We'll be there. Does it seem outside the realm of possibility? No. Some people are saying that, the streets of Baku have been holding a race. Baku is their champion, or excuse me, their capital city. It wouldn't be the first that they've held a major event there. They've had GT racing there in the past. So there's a potential, but, they're not going to go to a street race in Azerbaijan. They're going to require that they build a giant circuit. And, this is all preliminary and really way too early for us to be hearing about it. And the only thing I can think of is, a little bait and switch going on, possibly. Bernie says, look at the birdie, pay attention to the birdie, don't mind what's going on over here. Don't mind the fact that public opinion may force us to cancel the Russian Grand Prix. don't look at the fact that the human rights groups are already lining up against Bahrain while testing was going on there. And, by the way, there's this little court case in April. Look at the birdie. Look at the birdie.
Don't look at me.
It is a twisted little world. But, okay, Azerbaijan, throw him in the hat. Throw him in the hat there with New Jersey.
Mexico.
Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach.
there's a few people that want a Formula One race. And we'll just say that Bernie's group hasn't exercised the best judgment in which races to hold.
Yes. Well, hey, let's go ahead and throw Indianapolis in there and say that it'll be a double points race since they're all about the gimmicks.
Well, why not? Double points race at Indianapolis, and they could open up the track a little bit, maybe hoon around the golf course. put a joker, you know, outside the track, you know, never mind. I shouldn't even be talking about this stuff. Anyway, moving forward.
Yeah, well, let's go right ahead and talk about Formula One coverage here in the States. Obviously, a point of contention amongst those who missed the old days of speed. I thought NBC did a fantastic job in 2013. Obviously, a few hiccups. That's to be expected. I'm sure that speed wasn't perfect when they started, but NBC did a fantastic job. And they're going to actually begin their coverage, obviously, this weekend with the coverage of the Australian Grand Prix. The race itself will kick off at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time on NBC Sports Network. That is a cool 12:30 Central Time for those of us here in the middle portion of the country. I will be up to watch it.
Indeed.
And I will have it on DVR just in case I fall asleep, because let's face it, I'm getting old. I can't stay up like I used to could. So, but can't, NBC.
Can't use a style book like you used to could.
Exactly. but we do have 175 hours of total coverage for Formula One. That's fantastic. Yeah. And what we're looking at, starting off, Thursday, March 13th, we're looking at Sebastian Vettel on road and on track. That's going to start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I will be tuned in. Then we've got the 9 p.m. F1 countdown. Then, special treat, we get Australian Grand Prix practice number one. And then at 11 p.m., Road to Ferrari will also be on NBC Sports Network. Friday, we're talking about a couple of re-airs, and then we will have and this is like in the wee hours, okay? So after Road to Ferrari, you've got Midnight Horsepower. At 1 a.m., you'll have a re-air of the Vettel special. 1:30 a.m., you get the Australian Grand Prix practice number two, and then you'll get another F1 countdown, this time with some updates from practice number two. That will be actually 5 p.m. that Friday, so it'll seem like, oh my god, what's going on? Saturday the 15th at 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, you'll get the Mobile One, The Grid, and then Formula One countdown re-air again for the 80th time. Australian Grand Prix qualifying at 2 a.m., and then at 6 a.m. you'll have the re-air of the qualifying. So, moral of the story, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening and you're trying to plan out as I read you the schedule of events, is you need to set your DVR for qualifying unless, one, you work at night, or two, you are an early bird and plan on getting up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. And if you do that, you're crazy. So, Sunday the 16th, for the 81st time, you'll get F1 countdown at 1 a.m. And then at 1:30 a.m., you'll get the Australian Grand Prix, finally, F1 season, and all three cars that finish will be here. And then you'll have F1 Extra, which is kind of like their post-race show at 4 a.m. So that's kind of, and then again, that race will re-air at 6:30 a.m. Eastern, the Australian Grand Prix. So you need to make sure that if you do not plan on getting up, that you set your DVR, because if you do not, you will not get to see the race, and you will lose all right to bitch about anything, because I've told you six times to set your DVR. So if you don't set your DVR, that's your problem.
In case you're wondering, the commentators for this season on NBC will be Lee Diffie, David Hobbs, and Steve Matchett. There was some talk at some point that that Lee Diffie would be stepping aside for the Suave one.
Ah, yes, the used car salesman.
Mr. Bob Varsha. But it looks like Varsha will step in occasionally, but he's not, you know, going to be anchoring the Formula One broadcast. The other thing to point out, for this year's season, NBC will be carrying 4 of the Grands Prix, while the rest will be on NBC Sports and some on CNBC. So keep your eyes and ears tuned to the schedule as the weeks go by. They'll probably do a fairly good job of announcing what will be where. But the specific ones that'll be on NBC on the network over the air, you will be able to watch Monaco over the network. You'll be able to watch Canada. You'll be able to watch Austin and Brazil.
Okay. That's fair.
Montreal, Monaco, and Austin, they will have all of their broadcast team there.
Woohoo!
So that's,
wait, what?
They're going to Monaco.
Really?
Yeah.
I had to take a step back there for a second.
That's something I'm not used to.
Interesting.
Yeah, indeed.
Huh. Well, that's going to be awesome. I mean, hey, great day to be lead if it be David Hobbs or Steve Mashett.
Oh, indeed.
Jeez.
Indeed. That'll be very cool for them. So, yeah, nice to see. I mean, NBC Sports has turned out to be a good place for Formula One to land in the wake of Speed disappearing. So,
indeed. Well, I think that should be it. Yes, it is. Let's talk about Formula One at Melbourne. Finally, Mike, finally. We don't write about it much on the site anymore, but then again, who are we kidding? What do we write on the site? It's more of a, hey, let's populate this with press releases and justify a place to put our radio show. Yep. I mean, brutal honesty. Brutal honesty.
We got some good people writing on the site, and we appreciate that.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I don't write much anymore. Obviously, you've stepped away from the writing, and Doug's busy. I mean, so pretty much Mike Shaw and Josh and Steve Cook and those guys holding it down for us. But again, I feel guilty because I feel like I just use it as a place to park the radio show. So, but anyways, let's talk about Melbourne. We're finally here though, dude, and it's finally Formula One season. You and I, we met talking Formula One over at Formula One blog in the forums. Obviously, we're very passionate about the sport, and you know, this is huge for us. This is the start of the NFL, if you will, for us.
Yeah.
And already out of the gate, Christian Horner. Never afraid to be, you know, never one to really hold his opinions on much of anything to himself, is afraid that Mercedes could finish 1 or even 2 laps ahead of anybody else at the racetrack.
Well, here's his reasoning for saying that. The you know, at all the practice sessions, I think officially if you got out the scorecard for the day and looked it over, the lorry that kept hauling Vettel back to the pits, he had more laps than Vettel did by the end of testing. Yeah, it's been pretty bad. So their testing has not gone very well, but I don't think it's a fair statement to say that Mercedes is going to be 2 laps ahead of everybody. Maybe the Mercedes engines are going to be head and shoulders above everybody, but I don't think Ferrari's completely out of the game.
No.
In fact, yeah, I think Ferrari's going to be okay. It's just who has the pace, who's able to get that pace and keep that pace. It's going to come down to fuel strategy, and unfortunately, we thought we got rid of this, but now that they're limiting it to 100 kilograms of fuel, and you know, it depends on how efficient those engines are as to what they can do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how much you're giving back from recovery on these cars to how fast you can go. Here's the funny thing on this, and tell me if you've heard this one before, but we're doing throttle and brake by wire this season. Brakes have been up to this point, you know, a hydraulic thing. Throttle has been kind of all over the place, but for this year, throttle is different, and they're actually referring to it in some circles as a torque control pedal.
Interesting.
Because what you're doing is you're giving an input to the system by pushing down the throttle or whatever you want to call it, and the system's going to determine what actually kicks on and off based on the position of that throttle, the speed of the car, and everything like that. Because at low end, you know, at the slow speeds, they're going to be wanting to use most of their torque coming from the electric motors because that's going to be more efficient. Mm-hmm. And then as they speed up, less is going to come from the electric motors and more is going to come from the petrol engine. And, you know, when you go and press on the brake pedal, the same thing's going to happen, but a little different. It's going to start kicking in engine braking first and then start to apply the brake pads. So you've got, this is a delicate balance because it doesn't matter how good or bad that engine is. It's how you massage the software to do what you need it to do. It does come down to some pretty interesting software engineering just to control, you know, all the different variables of this system. So it's going to be fun to see what everybody's come up with and how these cars do on the track.
Indeed. And, you know, I know that we give a lot of crap to the cars this year because we're like, oh, they're so ugly. And, you know, they got the dangle. Oh, what do you call it? I can't even go into it without laughing for 10 straight minutes. But
I was listening to Formula One blog this past week, and one of the commentators on there, Frantic, by the way, Andy, he made the comment that one of the adult shops over in England actually tweeted out and said, "We're flattered that you used our product as a model for your new Formula One nose."
Oh my!
Anyway,
looking at you, Caterham.
yes, and Williams.
Yeah, and Williams. But that being said, I mean, you know, with the software, with the new engines, with the new body designs, I mean, this is what we always – this is what we in the North America really clamor for, though, is it not? Well, I mean, we all the time want to see different aerodynamic solutions, different, you know, I don't know, engine solutions, if you will, just different engineering solutions in general brought to the track. And I know it's easy to scoff at these cars because obviously they're ugly as sin. But at the same point in time, this is what you get. This is what you want. This is what you asked for, was engineering parity and different kind of solutions for different sets of problems. And I for one, am super excited to see the cars on track, especially that Williams. I may be a Williams convert because that martini livery is sweet.
Yeah, it's classic and it's clean and it's beautiful and it's not the Williams livery we've seen over the last couple of years, which has just been blue. Well, you think of Williams, and for years there that RBS blue, you know, with a little white in it here and there, and you know, ugh. It's just hideous. Mm-hmm. This is sweet. It's really nice looking. They've done a good job. I don't know, man. I'm totally with you on the engineering aspect of it. This is a new design challenge, and you're seeing all these cool solutions to this design challenge. You know what? And I'll say it again. I said this a couple podcasts before. The unfortunate thing is, what everybody, when they tune in to watch this race, is going to see are those noses. And that's going to unfortunately distract people from the cool crap that's going on in these cars. I mean, like you said, new solutions for aero. I mean, you take an example of it. Red Bull came out, and they've got these super sleek-looking side pods. And it's all molded tight, and it's beautiful. But the problem is they're not getting enough airflow with that Renault engine.
Crap.
The car, the Renault engine that did the most laps in testing by a mile was the Caterham. And if you look at the side pods on the Caterham, it's just like these giant wind tunnels on the side. It's very different. And they went super conservative, and it may be the only way they'll actually finish races is that they have a super conservative design aspect to that car that gets as much cooling to that engine as possible. But I don't know. The you take a look at what McLaren did with their rear suspension and how they moved it back so that the suspension attachment points were further back in the car, and they added those aero blocking to the suspension arms. It's going to be interesting to see how that actually works out for them. But they're trying to reclaim some of the downforce they lost because the front wing is 30% smaller. That, you know, you're getting 30% less downforce. But these cars in a straight line now, because they don't have that downforce, that drag, they're going much, much faster. So your straight line speeds are higher, but your quartering speeds are lower, and they're doing everything they can to reclaim that downforce they lost in the cornering speeds. So this is going to be a fun development year because they're going to be developing these cars like crazy through the course of the season. It's a brand new paradigm, and it's going to be fun to see how it all shakes out. And then the big variable is how often do these engines blow up?
Oof, kablamo.
Good thing for Pirelli, their tires are not on the hook this year. If they have tire problems, it's going to be mitigated by the fact that there are going to be lots of engine failures. There's going to be lots of cars going slower because they have to meet their fuel mileage for the race, or else they won't even finish.
Yeah. Pirelli gets a free pass.
Yeah, Pirelli is not on the hook. However, most of the cars are.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Yeah, I heard on 5 Live that's already kicked up again. I heard their preview last week, so it was nice to listen to that. But they said that they were talking. They're like, yeah, what's the over under on cars finishing in Melbourne? And they talked about it a bit, and it sounded like their general consensus was the over under should be set at around 12.
Eesh.
That's pretty bad. That means 10 cars not finishing. And you know what? I think that's a valid prediction because nobody had any real reliability in testing. Some people were able to get out there and put up some crazy laps on these cars and do some race distances, but everybody had failures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it presents an interesting thing, and I was also, I was asked to join one of the fantasy kind of Formula One prediction things through that Castrol GP predictor, and it's like, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, first off, how many cars are even going to finish? I need to kind of think about that for a minute anyways. And then look at the talent and some of the swaps. I mean, obviously, I told you before the show, I've got Vettel finishing 10th. And that's best case scenario for that team, I would think. But you look at the kind of talent and the kind of guys we're seeing. I mean, I got Felipe Massa finishing 5th.
That's a good pick.
And that Williams. So, I mean, I just don't know. It's such a crapshoot, man. I mean,
I think it's going to be safe to assume at this first race you're going to get about 50% attrition.
Mm-hmm.
Not meaning that 50% of the cars won't finish. I'm not quite sure on that. I think you're going to have several cars not finish, but I think you're going to have a lot of people just drop back, just dial it back. They need to get miles on the car. They need to get data. They're going to treat, part of this race as a big test. But people are going to have heating issues and what have you. And that's why for my predictions for this race, and I'll go ahead and throw mine out, I'm predicting Rosberg on the top step, Alonso on the second step, and the safety car driver on the third step. No. I'm putting Massa on the third step.
Oh, wow.
I think that's a fair pick because – even if these cars aren't the fastest on the grid, I have a feeling that their drivers are going to be able to bring them home.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's easy to pick Lewis Hamilton. He's the hands-down favorite. If you went to Vegas and put money on Lewis Hamilton, you wouldn't get much back at the end of the year. He has to be the hands-down favorite for this year, just because of how well Mercedes tested. But the problem with that is Lewis has still come to grips with these brakes on this car. He's not liking the feel of the brakes because it's entirely by wire. It's not, you know, you're not getting the feedback you used to get through your foot. So I'm going to throw out Rosberg because I think Hamilton, while he will probably finish, he's not going to finish very high. Alonso, he just does amazing things with cars, even if they are wacky new pieces of technology. And Massa, just for good measure. Ricciardo, first out.
Okay, well, per my Castrol Edge Grand Prix Predictor software, yes, fancy, I will say this. Nico Rosberg finishes first. Second place will go to Kimi, Mr. Raikkonen.
Nice.
And third place will go to, in his picture, he just looks absolutely like crap and crummy. But third place, and I hate to do it, will go to Lewis Hamilton. Now, for those who are still listening, I also have, like I said, I got Alonso just off the podium, Massa in fifth. So that's my top five. And then just kind of I threw some names in for the rest of the positions because I didn't really know who all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a crapshoot at that point. My first out, though, is going to be Pastor Maldonado. I will say that I think he's going to be a little overexcited with his newfound Lotus ride. I think he's going to overdo it.
My best decision ever was going to Lotus.
What do you mean they're almost bankrupt? What do you mean the team I raced for last year has more money
and a better engine?
Yeah,
and a really nice paint job.
Oh, I know, right? If I'm Pastor Maldonado, I'm beside myself and kicking myself in the ass for that choice.
Oh man, so. Well, it was a choice that was made fairly early on. What do you mean I can't come back to the team after I accused you of sabotaging my car?
And, you know, I'll never forget last year during testing when Pastor was like, oh, you know, we've got such a great car. This is like three steps forward here at Williams, and we're going to be so good this year. And, you know, doing the good boy deed, and then he gets to the first race, and he's just atrocious on track. And he's like, oh, this is the worst car I've ever driven in my life, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, God. I was like, somebody shut him up.
Yeah.
So – but anyways, that there you have it. So we'll have the other boys' picks here coming in. But myself and Mr. Weitzel will take Rosberg for the win because he's just a cool customer. Mike has Alonso and Massa rounding out the podium. I will take Kimi and Lewis. And then Mr. Weitzel has Mr. Ricciardo for Red Bull as first out. And I will take Pastor Maldonado because he's a hot-headed moron. And he's got the Pinzer Walrus Tusk kind of nose. And nice. I just always like to see that fail.
See,
I did as well when Williams had it back in like 2004. It was the most ugly thing I've ever seen in my life.
What fun.
Well, there we have it. I mean, that's the show, everybody. So
you can all go home now.
Yeah, you can all go home. No, well, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. How's that? But yeah, great weekend of racing coming up. So we've got the Australian Grand Prix. We've got 12 hours of Sebring. We'll be, you know, obviously tracking everything that happens. That's Mazda Road to Indy as well as IndyCar as those seasons are about to materialize and start. So I just would like to say to everybody, thank you for listening. Obviously enjoy doing this show tonight. It was an honor, Mr. Weitzel, to throw it old school, if you will.
Indeed.
So good fun, good fun, always fun. So, but thanks everybody. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel. So I guess all that's left is to say good night, Mike.
Good night.